What's up, everybody? That was Copter Shrapnel by Shadowhand. Just a little taste of some local music. You know how we do it here on the Madhouse Network, local MMA, local music, supporting local businesses. Unlike the other podcasts on the network, Lopaki's Lounge currently does not have any sponsors, and it may be staying that way because I don't really like having to kowtow to other people. So I'm looking to probably keep it as a sponsorless show. And it's not going to really be very consistent on how often it happens. Just whenever I feel up to it, I'll drop some knowledge on you guys. Tonight, I really felt like talking to the two young ladies that are going to join us, Roma the Panther Pavlik and Courtney Cast Iron Casey, both coming off huge wins. Roma just made her pro debut. Courtney obviously has quite a few fights under her belt, just had her second successful fight over at PXC. So those are the kind of things we're going to be talking about on Lopaki's Lounge. Heck, you know, some nights we may even talk about conspiracy theory if I can get the And Dumb guy from Budo Fights to come on, or maybe even Choctaw Brad Poole. You just never know who will be showing up in the lounge, but the lounge will always be full of fun and good times. One night I might even make Skippy Cohen be a guest, and we'll put his feet to the fire and see what he thinks about everything in the world. One of the things I do want to let you guys know about, as you know, Skippy and I on our other show, Madhouse Live and The Rogue Show, are huge friends and fans of John Nutt. I was just reading on Fuck It News that John is going to actually be stepping into the cage at Full Metal Dojo 4 in February against a very game opponent by the name of Musa Conte. And he fights out a Phuket top team there in Phuket. So it should be an interesting thing. Full Metal Dojo is taking over the Thailand MMA scene and kind of filling that void left by Dare Sports. So going to be really interesting to see what pops off there and what they have coming down the pipe in the future. We just came off a really successful No Sleep Till Bangkok episode. And so good things to come from FMD, and look forward to seeing John Nutt back in the cage. I think he's done that for every promotion he's worked for or been a part of. He also fought for Dare at one point too. I'll never forget Skippy telling me, "He went from the announcer's table straight to the cage. It was crazy." So those are the kind of things we're going to touch on here on the lounge. Let's look at a quick rundown of this coming fight cards. You got a big fight over there in Singapore with 1FC. For those of you here in the Pacific Northwest, actually, this one's in the Philippines. I thought for some reason it was in Singapore, but that was the last one. But for everybody here in the Pacific Northwest, and specifically those of you in Vancouver, Bibiano Fernandez will be headlining that event. It's also a big weekend down in Australia. Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. As we all know, I'm a huge fan of the Aussie scene. We've got Hex Fight Series and my favorite event. They've had an awesome young lady from here in the Pacific Northwest on their card before. Rochambeau MMA number 4 is going down. We've also got Pancrase 263, Ultimate Reno Combat 49, RFA 21, Invicta FC 10. Now, this is going to be an interesting card. You got Michelle Watterson facing off against Tibercio. Not really sure how that fight will go. Pretty sure it'll be a walkthrough for Michelle. One of my favorite people that I've got to meet that just dumbfounds me that she fights MMA, Roxanne Modafferi. We'll be fighting a good friend of the MMA Madhouse families and Andrea Lee. It's going to be a real tricky fight for Roxanne. I think her best bet is to try to take that fight into the later rounds and hope she can get it to the ground. I just see Andrea Lee being far too athletic for Roxy and being able to dominate the fight there on the feet. It'll also be the return of Charmaine Tweet at 145. I was hoping she'd stay at 155. Probably just too hard to find her fights in that category. Or that weight class, I guess, would be the better way to put it. And then you've also got Peggy Morgan. So, you know, four friends of MMA Madhouse. You've also got Cassie Robb stepping up. She's been due to be back in the Invicta FC cage. It's really good to see her back there again. And she's fighting Jin Yu, which should be a really good fight. Both of them like to stand and bang. And I would be really rooting for Cassie to pull out the win there. Her significant other, Stephanie Skinner, is on a 2-fight win streak right now. Let's see if they can keep it rocking and rolling there and get Cassie a big win. That would be fantastic news. So, you know, that's kind of enough about the fight scene. We all know – oh, wait, no, I forgot. Skippy would be mad at me if I didn't mention this. But Oplot Challenge 105 is going down Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. If you track down the Global Combat Network, you can watch that fight live, because I'm sure Skippy will have tracked down a stream by then. You also got Bama 17 this weekend. We'll just give you guys a quick rundown. KSW. Seems like every weekend there's 45 freaking events going on in Poland. I don't really know how they have enough fighters for all this, but the guy that is headlining this, the Cannibal Kaladov, dude, this guy is a savage. Now, this fight was originally rumored to be Vishali Vasilevsky versus Mamut Kaladov, and that would have been a mega fight. A mega fight at 185. Those two guys, if you're following the Eastern European Russian fight scene, are two of the baddest dudes on the planet outside of the country that most of you people don't know about at this time. But I'm telling you, keep an eye out for Kaladov and for Vasilevsky, because they are both nasty. And it's going to be interesting to see how Brett Cooper can handle Mehmed. Brett is a grinder. He's a really tough guy. He's had some success at Bellator, was recently cut in a lot of the craziness that Bellator has been doing lately, cutting really good guys, letting them go to other organizations for some reason, like they have some stock pool of talent that I don't know about. But, I mean, this will be a real test, and for most people that follow, that are kind of casual followers of MMA, they'll probably be enlightened as to who Mehmed is, because I fully expect him to finish Brett Cooper, probably late first, early second round. Haven't really decided how I'm going to pick that fight yet, but I do know that I'll be picking Kaladov to win. The dude is just a savage. Also on this card, you got Pudzianowski versus Nastula, which will be a great fight. And Peter Struis and Jay Silva, which could be interesting. You know, Jay Silva retires after almost every fight here recently, but keeps getting offered to take more fights. So, hey, you know, more power to him. Keep getting paid, doing what you do. And best of luck to you, man. But I think you've got your hands full with Struis. And it will be interesting to see how it all plays out. I think that's pretty much everything. NAAFS has a good card this weekend. Oh, yeah. My girl, Helen Lacouro with WCC. They have a big event going down in Lancaster. Haven't really got to see much of a fight card on that, so keep your eyes open for what's going on there. And then one of our favorite guests in one of the most awkward moments, I think, in the history of Madhouse Live, Jennifer Ray has an event with Cowboy Extreme Cage Fighting going down there at Cowboys Dance Hall in San Antonio. If Skippy was here, we'd end up having to hear about all the great places to eat in San Antonio and then go float the river and yada, 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 and eat this Greek food and eat these Mexican tacos and do this and do that. But it'll be a good event. And then for those of you here in Oregon that are tuning in, you know there's a rumble at the Roseland Saturday night. Will be interesting to see how that plays out. Haven't seen a fight card for that, but as usual, probably won't see the fight card till after they have weigh-ins at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday when they actually are able to finalize it. And then you've got the Rings Outsider event there in Yokohama Saturday night at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So make sure you tune into all that. There's been some crazy news in the world of MMA today, as many of you know. We're not going to talk on that because we are going to probably hammer that topic to death on Thursday night during the Rogue Show. Oh, Bootsy, you can hassle me anytime, brother. I hope all is going well for you down there in Vegas. Now you got some big things on the horizon. We'll be looking to set that up here shortly. Skippy's already talking shit. I got to set up the chat box so Skippy can talk more shit. Let's just activate that chat right now. And we will do it like this. Boom. Open moderator. There you go, guys. There's your chat box. Now go have your fun and be delinquents. Because I know that's what you all want to do. And we'll see how this works out. I'm not sure. It's loading right now. Loading, loading. Load is complete. And boom. I will get you guys the link to the chat box as we speak. So head over to Skippy's post. And you can find... Oh, no. It's actually going to be on mine. And boom. There's the link to the chat box. I think that should work for everybody. And now I can get hassled by Skippy and Bootsy. It's going to be great times. I know Skippy, or I know Bootsy really is going to enjoy the first guest we have. I think he's actually match made both fighters on tonight's show, and Courtney and Roma. I know I can't remember if he was a matchmaker when Courtney fought there, but I think he was, and I'm pretty sure that he was also. I know he was a matchmaker for Roma's fight when she fought Aspen Ladd down there. I really be interested to see what Roma thinks about Bootsy, what Bootsy thinks about Roma, because I'm sure it is gonna be crazy now that the chat box is going. You guys aren't even using it. Aren't even using the damn chat box. Jeez, man, I'm going to shut it down here momentarily if it doesn't start getting action. It's kind of hard for me to pay attention to both. You know, that's how we roll here at MMA House. We just do everything on our own. You don't worry about it. You just rock and roll, do the show. Let's see who this is calling in. We've already got a caller. I don't know who it could be. 847, who do I got? Roma, oh my God, yeah. You're here. Everybody, we've got Roma Pavlik on the line with us now, live and not in person. I believe she's been studying all day for finals, but we'll talk about finals later. Roma, why don't you give everybody a quick rundown on who you are, where you're training, and what your record as a pro is now.
All right, well, my name is Roma Pavlik. I'm training out of Performance Martial Arts here in Springfield, Oregon. I am now a 1-0 pro, 5-1 amateur. I am mostly a ground fighter. Anything else? Did I miss something?
I don't think so. I would say you're mostly a ground killer, not necessarily a fighter. You get people to the ground and it's pretty much over for them.
That's my game plan. No secret.
Now,
I'm sure
to say
the ground is my ocean. I'm not hiding anything.
Hey, that's true. You know, I mean, you know, it's like I always said, you know, if you know how you can win the fight, might as well not waste any time getting it there and getting rid of business. You're not paid by the hour. You're paid by the victory.
Right. And plus, the way I always say it, you know, you can get a lucky knockout. Anybody, even an untrained person, can just take a swing, close their eyes, knock you out, the armbar. You've got to know what you're doing on the ground.
Very true. I think one time you had me in an armbar at Northwest where I first met you at, and I think it was lucky that I tapped on that one.
Yeah, maybe.
So, hey, now, how's everything been going? I know that you took the fight at Dakota Fighting Championships on kind of short notice, which is really out of the norm for you, and especially as a pro debut, but things went your way. So why don't we talk about the build-up to that?
Sure. As I was getting, you know, I always train. It's not like I'm an off-season athlete and then someone offers me a fight. But I'm also, I always feel much more comfortable when I have, you know, at least like 6 week notice. Just, I really, every time I fight, I want to go out there and just be as prepared as I possibly can be. So throughout my, I think I took it on, 3 weeks notice? Throughout that time, I kept referring to my oops baby of MMA, where I'm just like, this is not how it's supposed to happen. I was so careful in my amateur career. If someone offered me an amateur fight, you know, a couple years ago on 3 weeks notice, I would say no way. And here I was at my pro debut, like, you know, where the wins and losses actually really matter. And I'm just like, sure, I'll take it. And then I thought about it the next day. I'm like, I hope this is a good idea, because it happened to fall, you know, a week before I'm taking my law school finals. The timing wasn't perfect, but of course, in hindsight, I'm glad I took it. But if you could say, pretty much everything that could go wrong leading up to that fight did go wrong. So I feel like if I could do this, you know, it's only uphill from here.
I think, though, one of the best things that happened for you, Roma, in the build-up to the fight was you did get to take a trip down to Louisiana and train with Andrea Lee. How much do you think that helped in your preparation?
Oh, that was amazing. Andrea Lee, I think, is going to be one of the future of the flyweights. You know, she's fighting Roxanne this Friday. And I know Roxanne on paper, you know, she's the best. She's a seasoned vet. But I really think Andrea's going to take it to her. I think Andrea's going to win. But anyway, just training down there and just training with a girl my size whose job is to be a fighter, and that's all she does. And it was just great. You know, I've never trained with someone my exact weight class that was, you know, in the high professional ranks. Donnie Aaron's an amazing coach. I really want to go back. I think that helped me a lot and kind of mentally gave me an idea of, like, where I was with my game and stuff. And Donnie took extra time to help me with my striking because he knows that, you know, I come out of a jiu-jitsu gym. So I'm kind of lacking in the striking sometimes. But, man, that was really cool. And I do plan on going back.
Now you mentioned that, you know, you don't really get to train that often with women in your weight class. Let's just be honest. I mean, you don't really get to train with women that much at all that are on that level. I mean, I know you get to do some striking with Sierra Irvine, who trains here in the Springfield area as well. So you can kind of at times work on your striking like that. But she really tends to stick to that Muay Thai style. And, you know, you're at a gym that's full of some really top-notch guys, but it's got to be kind of hard and had to be really nice for you to be able to go down there and get that experience. And how was it for your confidence after you left there? Did you really feel like no matter what was presented to you in this pro debut that you kind of had an idea that you'd be able to withstand it?
Yeah, I mean, I felt, you know, I did some sparring with Andrea, and, you know, if I came out of that alive, this pro debut would definitely not be harder than a sparring session with Andrea Lee. And actually, going back to Ciara really quickly, it's not official yet, but she is probably going to be doing some MMA in the next few months. So
that would be awesome.
I've been trying to switch her over for a long time, and her striking is amazing. I mean, she's been doing Muay Thai for, what, like 8 years? We always joke that we're kind of like the yin and the yang, you know. She's the dark-haired brunette striker, and I'm the blonde-haired, blue-eyed ground person. If you could put us together into one fight, it would be awesome. But, yeah, Ciara is the only girl my size in the area for me to train with. So, especially if she goes into MMA and we work together, I think that would be amazing for both of us. But otherwise, you know, during law school, it's hard for me to go up to Portland. Liz Tracy was the only flyweight my size, and she's moving down to California to train. So it's a little bit harder, yeah. But, I mean, the guys I have, actually, I'm pretty lucky. We have a small group of performance martial arts with MMA guys, and they all happen to be about my size. So we have, like, a Facebook group, performance martial arts MMA group, and we're always, you know, saying, hey, you want to train today? What are we going to work on? So really getting ready for this pro debut, I really have to thank the teammates that, you know, I was on the chat room or whatever, and I said, hey, I know it's a Saturday night, but who wants to come in and give me a few rounds of sparring and hold some mitts for me? And these guys were awesome. They'd be like, yeah, I'll come in. I'll do it. So I think that's the most important thing, regardless of gender, is just good training partner. You do need someone about your size just so you don't get hurt, and just someone who's willing to put in the time to help you out. So in the end, it works out fine. But, yeah, definitely a treat to go and train with Andrea.
Now, you mentioned performance and the kind of that family atmosphere. That seems to be the rumor on the street here around town. Can you maybe talk about what it's like training there and the level of training that you do get?
Performance, yeah. I mean, it's mostly a jiu-jitsu gym. And honestly, if you look through the entire Pacific Northwest, you're really not going to get much better than Ben Baxter and Ryan Cunningham. So, and the way Ben Baxter runs his gym, the most important thing is getting some good training in and getting good people in the gym. And he's always there. He's always running the classes. He's not the gym owner that's like, oh, well, I own this gym. Now I'm just going to disappear forever and hire a bunch of purple belts to run it. Ben coaches, and then he rolls with us, and he spends extra time, you know, like if someone has a fight coming up, helping them get ready. Then there's Tyrone Angolia. He just got his brown belt, and he's my MMA coach. So I get a lot of privates from him where we're working on wrestling, we're working on our striking, our transitions. Brian Cunningham, the black belt in judo, just got his brown belt in jiu-jitsu as well. He runs some wrestling classes, some no-gi classes 3 days a week now. And I've gotten some private lessons from him, just like working out the cage, using some judo trips. So, everything I need to be a successful professional fighter is absolutely there in that gym. And everyone there just they're willing to take care of me, you know. They go out of their way, like, hey, Roman's got a fight. Yeah, I know I'm busy. It's Saturday night. It's Sunday afternoon, but I'll come in. So, I mean, that's huge. It definitely is, like, my second family.
Now, your boyfriend is quite the established grappler as well. Many people may not know, but Andrew, I think he's a purple belt, but he might have just got advanced to a brown. I could be mistaken there. But now, do you guys ever settle arguments on the mat?
No, which is a good thing because I'd always lose.
I don't know.
We do, you
know,
like if someone's taking up all the space in the kitchen, you get a little bit of pummeling and arm dragging and stuff like that. but, you know, we roll, but he's, 6 foot tall, 195 pounds. And we're both one stripe purple belts, so equal skill level. He's probably a bit better than me in the gi, just because I split my time between the gi and MMA. But it's definitely nice to be with someone that, you know, understands the sport you're in. And I don't think a guy that didn't do martial arts would put up with my training schedule and everything, not home too much. But, yeah, no settling arguments on the mat.
Now, hey, we kind of got sidetracked, but I do want to get back to your pro debut. You fought Ashley, can't think of her last name, it's not really important. Why don't you maybe walk us through the fight and tell us how things went once you stepped into that cage?
All right, well, I'll back up for just before I even got there. 24 hours before I left town, I found out my coach could not come with me. So I was trying to scramble around, trying to figure out a replacement, and remember it's Thanksgiving weekend. I found a couple people willing to go, but, you know, the ticket's non-transferable, non-refundable. So here it is Wednesday, and I'm leaving at 7 a.m. on Thursday. And I got to go by myself. I drive up there Wednesday night. Liz Tracy and Dan Vendetta, they're grapplers, fighters, and they let me stay at their place, and they drove me to the airport. So I flew out there by myself. I cut weight by myself, made weight by myself. I was lucky enough, she was also on the card. They were willing to help me out. But this really added to, you know, first, it's short notice, which is definitely a first for me. It's my first pro fight. The pressure's on, you know, I'm coming off a loss. That was definitely getting in my head still, coming off of that. I don't have a coach with me. I'm in the middle of finals. And then, yeah, just having a brand new corner that has never met me before. That was pretty stressful. So, yeah, on fight day, they were giving me a couple tips on what they thought, you know, would be a good game plan. The difficult part there was what the corner suggested I do was different than what my regular MMA coach who couldn't come suggested I do. So that was another layer of, well, do I listen to the corner that's right here coaching me, or do I listen to the game plan that I've been working on for the last 3 weeks? And actually, I was probably the most calm I've ever felt walking out into the cage. I could tell she was probably a little bit more nervous than me. It was a packed house out in the casino in the middle of nowhere. And the fight started. I was really just focusing on being a little more patient. I didn't want to get caught like I did last time where I just barged in. And I'm sure my opponent studied the tape like, oh, she got caught. You know, she just kind of went nuts and went for the takedown right away. So I felt her out a little bit. And from what I remember, I haven't seen the tape at all. I just kind of kept taking her down. At one point in the first round, I had side control and I was ready to finish it. I was going to trap the arm, you know, with my legs and trap the other hand and just, you know, get a TKO, but my knee hit her in the face. So the ref, he steps between us. He goes, you know, illegal knee. And she leans over the ref. She goes, yeah, what the fuck? And just hits me in the face right during the timeout. Yeah, but only I get the point deduction. And I'm like, you know, that was not, I didn't mean the knee in the face. I was trying to trap that near side arm. Out of side control, but to my left knee, I was on her her right side. My left knee, as I was trying to trap the arm, hit her in the face. But I was just so frustrated. I'm like, no, I worked so hard to get it to the ground. And now I have to start from standing again. This sucks. So I didn't have much time left in the first round. I took her down again, went for Kimura, I think, and I missed it and the round was over. So it's the first time I've been in the second round. I can tell she's pretty tired. And all I was trying to do was close distance. I think I got a couple of double legs against the cage, you know, grab my hands behind her legs and just pulled down. Eventually, within a minute 45, I think I got to mount, and my favorite finish, to KO from mount. So that felt really good, you know, just despite all the, I don't mean, you know, just despite not having my coach there, just nothing that I normally would for a fight. It felt really good that I didn't kind of succumb to the mental pressure of, you know, sitting in your room by yourself for the last 2 days in the middle of North Dakota. That was, yeah. So I'm pretty happy. I know that won't happen next time. I'll definitely have one of my own coaches. But, I mean, the coach who cornered me was really good, so I really appreciated that.
So now, you know, this fight, I mean, I've known you for maybe a year and a half now. This fight being so out of the normal with short notice, then the haywire stuff, the 24 hours leading up to the fight, then you get the point deduction. Was this maybe your most rewarding fight that you've had to date?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I went through a lot before this fight. And it was, yeah, I've never been out of the first round before. And, you know, usually, like, for me, the hardest part is that mental game. You know, I've been working on it. But, you know, you get the butterflies in your stomach, you get really nervous, and then, you know, not having that familiar voice in the corner, I could kind of hear the crowd heckling me because she was from 2 hours away. You know, I'm the out-of-towner. So, and I mean, of course, it was my first pro fight. Not going to lie, it felt pretty darn good to get paid for what I do. Even though I forgot that I was supposed to get paid, so I, like, went. I left, and then later I had to come back, but...
Don't feel bad. You're not the only debuting pro that I know that has done that. That happens all the time. it seems to be the trend. Two things happen in your debut fight. There'll be that moment when you realize, holy cow, I can knee and elbow this person. And then afterwards, yeah, you forget to get paid. And then you're like, oh, wait, hold on. I got to go pick up some money. Let me go grab that real quick. So now, did you drop any knees or elbows to the head on her during the fight besides the one from side control?
Besides that one? Yeah, I think some elbows, definitely. I think the most embarrassing thing I did, I threw a kick. You know, I'm not a big kicker. I get kicked by Ciara all the time, so I just try to avoid them. And I connected. I'm like, ooh, that felt good. Let me throw another one. And as I'm throwing my next kick, I can hear Ben Baxter's voice say, Roma, your kicks, they're not fight ready. I connect with her, and the shock of connecting something. Anyway, I fell over my own feet right on my butt. And she was backing up, and she just saw me, like, on the ground. She's like, what? And kind of started coming forward. I got right back up to my feet, but I didn't throw any more kicks after that.
Okay, now I understand, because I did see a picture of you on the mat, and I was like, how the hell did Roma wind up on her butt? I was like, what happened here? I was like, this doesn't seem like anything how I pictured the fight to go, but I was like, maybe she did catch her, or maybe it was like a trip or something. I don't know what happened, but I'm glad that you were able to touch on that, because I was so lost.
Yeah.
I was like, how did that happen?
Kick. I didn't even think it was that terrible of a kick. I think it was a little slippery on the mat, or I think I questioned it last second as I connected. I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this. But it just happened, and I just tripped.
Now,
really,
the interesting
fight at all, but
the interesting thing you said there was your favorite kind of finish, the TKO from mount. Being somebody from a grappling school, I'm surprised it's not the submission or the armbar or the rear naked choke as your favorite type of finish in comparison to the mounted TKO.
From MMA, I have found that getting submissions, or armbars in particular, are hard. If I'm on mount, and there were times, you know, she was sticking her arms out, you know, trying to protect herself. The arm was there all day. I could have taken it. But why would I sacrifice mount, like the most dominant position, and risk, you know, the arm slipping out or something like that. I'd rather just hold my dominant position, inflict some damage, and make the ref stop the fight. Rear naked choke is different. You know, I think that's one of the highest percentage submissions in MMA. And then the triangle, you know, you don't want to be on bottom. So I would rather, I'm not going to be looking to get on bottom and go for a triangle. I think the Americana, the Kimura, those are good ones, but I'm always looking to solidify my position before I go for any sort of submissions. And, yeah, I just think if I get mount, if I get side control, like, I wasn't looking for submission from side control. I was looking to trap the one arm with my legs and the other arm, you know, put your, my coach called it, like, the telephone. You put your hand to your ear, and you trap their far side arm, and then you can just use your free hand to punch them and make the ref stop. And if you have good hip pressure and their arms are both trapped, they're not getting out of there.
No, I like to call that like the mounted crucifix position. You know, you get that bottom, you get your right leg or left leg over their close side knee to your hips, and then lock down that far arm, like you said, and that's just like a, you know, a mounted crucifix where then all of a sudden they can't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's better than going for, you know, people scramble, they're slippery, it's, I mean, of course, in jiu-jitsu, that's all you can do. That's what your punches are involved. It just changes the game. So I'd rather, I mean, if I can get mount, I'm pretty darn confident I'm pretty hard to throw off. So I'm not going to, you know, go for an arm bar. Unless, you know, the arm is just there and I'm afraid she might escape anyway, then I'd probably go for it. Or if there are only a few seconds left in the round. Otherwise, no, I'm just going to keep it.
Well, and with the arm bar, you know, I mean, I know that you roll a lot with the gi. It's really easier to keep track of that arm when you have the gi pants and somebody's wearing the gi top because it's not going to be able to slide around. Whereas if you're in a fight, no gi, they're going to be slippery. And like you said, you could lose that position really easily and then find yourself on bottom looking for, you know, either defending from their ground and pound or trying to scramble for a triangle.
Yeah, that would be like the worst nightmare. There's going from mount to trying to get an arm bar and ending up on bottom. Yeah, that would be horrible.
So now, you know, I did get to talk to you leading into the fight, and your one concern was maybe her catching you with anything. Did that happen at all? Did you feel any of her power, or was it you were able to get in tight and keep her from really letting her hands go?
Yeah, I mean, I think from, I asked the corner, being like, how did I look? Because, you know, after a fight, I feel like I remember little snapshots of it, but I can't, it's hard to give a play-by-play until I see the video. I think I kept her pretty defensive the whole time, and I just kept circling to the right, because I knew she liked to throw her right hand, and I knew she liked to throw her right kick. So I circled to my right, even if, I think she did throw one kick and connected, but I was circling to the right, so I didn't feel it at all. I didn't really feel, I mean, I got hit, of course, you know, it's a fight, you're going to get hit somewhat, but nothing really powerful, nothing that stunned me, not worse than sparring. I think the most damage I got was, like, me pressing my own face into the cage and, you know, running into elbows when I was trying for takedowns. Her corners kept saying, like, go for the guilty, go for the guilty, and I had, half guard, and she was trying to put a guillotine on me. I'm like, that's not going to work. I think I actually said it. I'm like, that's not going to work. You know, I'm
you're like, I'll pull this leg out. Yeah, you're like, I'll pull this leg out.
I wanted to do that position, like, yeah, you know, when you're in side control and the person, like, doesn't know, so they have you in a guillotine, your head up and, like, submit them with kind of like a little Kimura, just
yeah,
using your neck. I want to do that so badly. It's just, it's like the most embarrassing submission.
Okay,
yeah,
so
we're screaming for it.
Is that worse? Do you watch The Ultimate Fighter?
I haven't really, not too much.
Okay, well, Angela Magana caught Felice Herrig. She had her in side control, and she grabbed her arm and kind of did what you did, where she locked it in between her legs and had a pressure point on the back of her elbow and took her top leg and, like, pressed it back into an arm bar from that position. It was the sickest finish of, like, next to Eddie Ellis's bottom arm triangle against the kid from South Dakota. That's my second favorite finish I've seen on the Ultimate Fighter. It was dirty. It was, I don't even know how she pulled it off, but she just locked up her arm and like had it perfect to where like the thumb was just almost in like the up position, you know, and she just tweaked that elbow back and forced the submission in like 3 seconds.
That's awesome.
Now, you know, we've talked a lot about your fight career and a lot about, you know, law school and stuff like that previously on the show, but there's something I want to talk to you about. Not many people make me jealous by catching fish, Roma, but you are one of those people that tends to have this ability to, like, make me want to, like, go fishing as soon as I see some of your Facebook posts. Is this your ultimate form of relaxation?
Yes. The most succinct answer is yes. In fact, right now I'm kind of going crazy because for the last probably 4 weeks, I have not spent the day outside yet. You know, I've been training for the fight, and then I got back from the fight. I was going to go fishing, I think. I don't know, Friday or Sunday, but then I realized I have exams Monday and Tuesday. So fishing will wait until Wednesday. I told my boyfriend to take Wednesday off work so he can take me fishing. So, you know, if he doesn't do that, I'll be pretty upset. But, yeah, fishing, I've got my boyfriend Andrew to thank for that. He's a guide. He works down at the local caddis fly shop. I mean, he taught me how to fly fish back when we met in Montana, and there's just something really relaxing about just being out there in the river. Fly fishing, you know, it's more technical. You're trying. It feels more like a game, you know, like you can see your fly floating on top. You can see when a fish takes it. I like it a lot better than just throwing a hook and a bobber and just sitting there and drinking beer and waiting and hoping that a fish comes by and, you know, eats your worm or your bait. But lately, he got a motor for his boat. We've been going salmon fishing. It's just, it's so much fun. And I can't take full credit for those fish. You know, he knows the rivers. He knows how to read the water and how to kind of put me in the right place to catch a fish. But on Halloween, we went out fishing to one of the coastal lakes. And I swear, it felt like I was fishing for trout because almost every other cast, I was catching a big salmon. It was just some of the most incredible fishing that I've had in, like, a long time. So I am really looking forward to getting back out there, hopefully next week.
Yeah, that Halloween trip was the time where I was like, damn it, Roma, damn it. I was like, quit with this baloney.
Yep.
I'm like, this is hunting season, and I'm not fishing right now, and here you are out here catching monsters all day long and then bragging about it on Facebook. I was mad at you. I got to admit.
You should see my freezer.
Oh, don't even.
Salmon.
So when it comes to dieting, you don't really have a hard time with that then because you just go and catch the most organic food of them all, and then that's what you guys live on.
Yeah, or I send my guy out fishing, you know, when I'm too busy, like, he releases a lot of fish. And if it's like, you know, a wild steelhead or any fish that's, you know, more threatened, we always release them. But if he always goes fishing with his friends, I'm like, remember, bring a fish home. If you catch a big one, bring it home. I'm the one who insists on that. He's like, don't we have enough? I'm like, we can always have more. It lasts
now,
a long time at the freezer.
Who cleans them when they get brought home?
Oh, he does. I don't know how to, I would not clean the fish.
But you bait your hook.
It's too messy. It's too cold outside. I can tie my fly on, and I can do that, but I don't know how to, like, you know, the gear rods, I don't know how to deal with those, so I know how to tie the hook on those, and that's about it. But how to, like, set them up, I can set up a fly rod, but one of those regular big gear rods. So he's great, you know, he does take me out and sets all my stuff up, and gets probably a little bit frustrated when I'm like, can you fix this again? But
you know, there are a lot of similarities with fly fishing and gi jiu-jitsu, you know? I mean, like you mentioned, they're both very technical. They're almost cerebral in how you fish because you want to look at the, you know, the way the water's maybe coming from behind this rock and how the eddy flows out and where exactly to cast. And that's kind of the same thing when you're looking for that submission is, oh, look, this dummy's got their arm on the mat. That's an easy kimura. Let's lock it up on him. Oh, look, I'm going to float this dry fly right behind this rock, and I'm going to hammer this freaking steelhead. Boom, and there you go.
I did an interview out in Vegas, and I was making a similar, pretty much the exact same case for how fly fishing is similar to parkour. You know, you're just trying to navigate through the water and just trying to read the environment, the water or the cityscape, whatever you're playing in. And you're just trying to find your own little path through there. Just trying to guess, you know, you have to kind of think like the fish, you know. Like, where would they be? Does that look like the right place where they might hold? So just, that's what's so peaceful about it. Just, you have to be really in tune with the river. You're not just in the water and hoping for the best. I like, you know, you're moving up and down. It's quiet. Usually, I like it, you know, the best when there aren't any other people around. It's just kind of like my peaceful, meditative, like, reflective time. Usually every Sunday is my fishing time. I'm just like, no clients. No homework, just one day to go outside, you know, no cell phones. It's fantastic. It's probably just kind of like hunting, you know, where you're just walking through the woods, trying to track an animal. I think it's just, there's something about that really primal connection, you know, to being outside and trying to find your food, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. I mean, for the longest time, I've done strictly catch and release. And people have always kind of looked at me like, why would you go out there and go through all this effort to catch a fish just to release it? And it's like, because that's, I just want to catch it. I don't really, you know, there's no point in any other aspect of it. I mean, I just want to catch the fish. I won the battle, and then I can let him go back and keep perpetuating the species along. But here, as our food sources have become more contaminated and GMO'd, as far as with my fishing goes, I've decided to start keeping more fish because it's just really the, like I mentioned earlier, it's the most organic food that you can eat. I mean, you can go to a guy's garden where he says, oh, it's organic. And that just means that for 7 years he hasn't used chemicals or whatever, or if even that long, if he's not certified, who knows how long. Maybe, that just maybe means he's never put anything on the dirt. But, I mean, that, mm-hmm. that natural knowing where your food came from means so much. I mean, I hunt all the time. I love to fish. And to me, it's like people always say, oh, you know, well, you're a killer and I don't understand how you could hunt. But I was fortunate enough to hear this awesome quote. I was listening to Joe Rogan had Jim Shockey on his show the other day. And Jim Shockey said this quote from a guy named Jose Ortega y Gasset. And it says this. It says, one does not hunt in order to kill. On the contrary, one kills in order to have hunted. If one were to present the sportsman with the death of an animal as a gift, he would refuse it. And I think that really sums it up perfectly. I don't have to go out and kill something every time I hunt. And it's like you mentioned, it's just being out there. I mean, I get so many awesome views and sounds and experiences where I'm away from the grid and the matrix that I find that I'm at peace and I'm happier. And, you know, I don't feel that pressure of life because I'm in this moment. And that's what it's about, whether you're fishing or hunting or surfing or whatever, it's about that moment.
Exactly. And just, I mean, there's so many days where I've caught nothing, but it's almost like, how can you be worried about just everything seems so insignificant. Compared to, you know, being out, you know, in the water, out in the woods, you realize how small you are and how small your worries are compared to the whole big natural world that's out there. I guess it's probably as close to religion as I'll ever get, is nature and all that stuff.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, during elk season, this year was the first time I've done it solo, but I went on a 9-day hunting trip by myself. And people are like, oh, my God, how do you do that? Like, won't you go crazy? And I'm like, no, actually, I won't. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to enjoy at night. I'm going to enjoy looking up and seeing every constellation that I want to see. And in the daytime, I'm going to enjoy trying to take an animal on his turf in his backyard. And my mind will be consumed with the moments that I live in. It was when I came back, I had never been so refreshed or rejuvenated as I was on that trip.
Oh, it doesn't nothing, you know, I always say I would much rather go some remote place than to some like crazy resort. Like when I was living out in Africa, You know, it's you didn't have any TV, you didn't have your phone. You fall asleep, you know, you sit by the fire at night, you fall asleep, you see all the stars, and you get back up and you do it all over again. And it's just like you hear the hyenas, you hear the lions, and you're just like, wow, I don't feel very much on top of the food chain right now. It's just, it's extremely humbling. And like when I lived in Costa Rica too, you know, just, and I don't know, everything just felt a lot more raw, a lot more real. And I was living up in the mountains. And when I first got there, you know, straight from American society, I wake up and I'm like, I got to do something. I should, like, study for the LSAT or something. You know, I got to be productive. And the people out in this tiny town I was living in were like, just sit here and drink some coffee. I'm like, what do you mean just sit here? I can't waste my time. And fast forward a month later, I got it, you know. All right, I can just sit here and watch the sunrise. Not a waste of time, you know. And that's what they would do. They would just sit there, because then they would go and work, you know, pick coffee or bananas, and they would just sit there, drink coffee, and slowly watch the sun come up just in silence.
So we have a fan question. We have a fan question, Roma, and you know this person. Mm-hmm. Bootsy from formerly with Tough Enough. He lived in mm-hmm. Tronadora Lake Arenal. He's wondering, where did you live at?
Dominical area, and Providencia, which was a small town on this mountain called Cerro de la Muerte, which is Mountain of Death. So it was probably about 2 hours from the Pacific. So I lived up there for a while. It's where I bought a motorcycle off a drug dealer, got a puppy, lived out there in like the middle of a coffee field with like all the chinchas and all the spiders crawling all over me. And eventually I sold the bike, got rid of most of my stuff, hitchhiked with the puppy, and this couple picked me up. They took me to a town that was just down this pretty much 15 minutes away from Dominical. They gave me a 3-bedroom house and fed me and housed me for 6 months. And I still keep in touch with them, and actually went back to visit them like last March. So yeah, I spent most of my time right around the Dominical area.
So, you know, you've had one of the most interesting lives out of anyone I know. You've lived in Africa. You've lived in Costa Rica. You're a power lifter, right?
Bodybuilder.
Bodybuilder. Parkour. You did parkour as well. Is that what I'm understanding from the interview comparing fly
yeah.
fishing and parkour? You're a world-class BJJ practitioner. You're a pro MMA fighter. You're in law school. Am I missing anything?
I'm a personal trainer.
Yeah, so that's boring in comparison now, Roma. I mean, all these other
boring.
Cool things, and you can't throw in personal trainer. I mean, nobody cares about that.
Oh, man.
Which of these activities is your favorite? Or is what you're doing now your favorite because that's what you're doing?
You mean studying for finals? No.
Oh, well, let's take that back. Yeah, no. The MMA BJJ aspect that you're in this reincarnation of Roma Poelic's life, is this where you get the most enjoyment, or was it the parkour? Was it the bodybuilding?
It's hard to say. You know, I just find, like, I don't know, all these different aspects make up who you are. Everything has to be a balance. If I just trained MMA and did nothing else, you know, if I didn't have fishing, or if I didn't have school, so you know, the intellectual part, as much as I hate finals, it does feel good to have, you know, be challenged intellectually, physically, and then just have a connection with nature. There are days where, like, I miss just the absolute freedom of, because I just ran away to Costa Rica, you know, I just kind of lived there for 8 months, started my own gym, just, yeah, bummed around. Did teach some English, but that wasn't for too long. Africa, I was tracking rhinos. I was actually doing some work out there. But I feel like every single experience I've had, you know, and I mean, they sound glorious right now, but there, trust me, there were days where I'm like, this sucks. I want to go home. And I just had to remind myself that, you know what, no matter how badly it sucks, one day you're going to miss this, and one day you're going to say, hey, I'll take my worst day in Costa Rica just to be back there. Like, so that's kind of how I go through all my life. You know, everything's temporary. Everything's transient. I won't be able to do MMA forever. And yeah, of course, you know, let's be real. There are days where I'm like, everything hurts. I'm so tired. What am I doing? And I just have to be like, hey, stop it. You've got, you know, who knows what kind of window of time. You're going to miss the hell out of this someday. Especially, you know, jiu-jitsu you can kind of do forever, you know. But MMA, there's definitely, you know, so much wear you can put on your body that I just, I'm trying just to put my whole heart into it right now and go after my goal. I really want to fight an Invicta, and that would make me just feel like I've accomplished what I've really wanted out of this MMA phase of my life.
Well, I definitely will be pulling for you to get to Invicta. Bootsy would like to know, are you going to plan to continue to travel, or is that going to be on hold until after the fight career?
I mean, I'm trying to go back to Costa Rica again in March. That seems to be like my very grounding place. Like when I went out there originally, I had just graduated college, graduated Carleton, small, expensive liberal arts school, and it was in 2009, so there were no jobs. Starbucks wouldn't hire me because I had no experience, even though I had a bachelor's. So I'm like, screw this. I am getting the cheapest one-way ticket out of the country. And while I was down there, it was just a very, you know, kind of soul-searching moment. And I grew the most and learned the most about myself in that time period. So it's kind of one of those touchstone places I try to visit every year or two if I can. So I feel like I'm going to take advantage of being in school and having spring break and winter break and all those other breaks, because life will probably be different after I graduate. I don't think I can go to Costa Rica for a week kind of whenever I want to.
Well, with a law degree, I think you'll be able to.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like if I have a fight coming up, like that definitely limits how much I travel. I'm just like, again, I think I may for most of my life is – I wouldn't have enough balance. Like when I did bodybuilding, I did bodybuilding. That is all I did. I would show up to parties with my protein shake. I'd be super, super strict with everything. Then I kind of felt like I missed out, you know, on some of the fun in life. This time around, it's like, you know, it's not about how many hours you spend in the gym. It's the quality of that time. And if I'm sitting there, you know, spending 5 hours at a time in the gym, beating my head against the wall, I'm not really improving as much as, you know, do two-a-days, but 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening, and make sure you have a day to sharpen the saw, as Stephen Covey would say. So, you know, that way I still feel like I'm not burning out in any aspect.
So we have one more question from the chat box. And I think Roger's trying to get me in trouble here. He wants to know, how much do you like your manager?
Oh, Linda, she is awesome. So I think I was telling you this on Facebook, you know, but I'm not with Iridium anymore. I don't think I ever made that public. I mean, that's not really something you throw up on Facebook, like, hey, I left this manager and this management company, guys. Life event. but Roger introduced me to Linda, and Roger has just always been there for me throughout my MMA career. Like, Roger, I know you're listening, so hey, thank you so much, because if it wasn't for you, there's no way I'd be a 1-0 pro right now. Roger has had my back through the worst times, supported me in the good times. And yeah, he introduced me to Linda. And you know, it was never pushed on me like, hey, you know, you should be with Linda or whatever. It was just a choice that happened to. Seemed very natural. Linda and I got along. She is, you know, just a very straight up honest person. She doesn't try to put any shield over your eyes and try to get you to, you know, come over to her team or whatever. She works hard for the fighters. She works so hard for her fighters. Like Rachel's fighting this weekend. She had a death in the family that day, but she was still calling us to make sure that we were okay. So, I mean, really, she advocates for us. She makes sure that we're taken care of. I mean, I think, like, if I'm going to have a good MMA career, you need to have a really solid manager, one that looks out for you. Of course, she found me this opportunity. She found me this fight. So, yeah, she just takes care of me. She's great. Can't say
That's
enough
awesome.
Good things about Linda.
Well, hey, we're about to have to wrap this up. I feel like I could talk to you for hours on end, and I think next week after your finals, we have a date for coffee. I think we need to schedule that. Coffee, cake, and then Monday, if you're not in a final, or I may wait till Wednesday to show up at performance and be ragdolled by you savages over there.
Come on Wednesday, because I'm taking a final on Monday and Tuesday.
I will do that.
So, five cans of food, 30 days free to try it out.
That'll be awesome. Why don't you give a big shout out to all your sponsors? Tell everybody how they can follow you on social media. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out during Dead Week to sit down and chat with me, Rome. I really appreciate it.
Oh, this is great. I always love being on your show. And quickly, before I give my shout out, if you want to go, there's an awesome jiu-jitsu seminar, Toys for Tots, at Performance Martial Arts on Saturday, 11 to 2. There are four black belts that are going to be teaching a seminar. Just bring a toy to donate to a kid and you can come. So you should come to that.
I
got to
fill my deer tag. I got to fill my deer tag first.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. All right. I will give a shout out to Linda Kreiner, my manager, Roger Mitterling. I basically call him my co-manager and just sponsor, awesome friend, awesome guy. Thanks to all my teammates at Performance Martial Arts, all my coaches there. Same to all my coaches and teammates up at Rose City. I want to thank MMA Roadhog, Sports Food, Grip Mouth Guards, Rise Fight Shop, Tim Free, my chiropractor. You know, one of these days I'm actually going to have a list of these in front of me. All my other sponsors that support me, I really appreciate it. I want to give a shout out to Andrea Lee and Charmaine Tweet. They're fighting this Friday. I'll be cheering for them. I think that's about all I got.
Awesome, Roma. Thank you so much again. I really appreciate it. Best of luck with your finals, and I will see you next week. We better be doing pierogies or whatever the hell that place is called over there on Willamette, because it's got awesome coffee. What is
burritos.
It?
Burritos. Oh, pierogies.
Yeah, pierogies.
I'm saying burritos as well.
Burritos, this is going to be awesome. I am excited about this now.
We'll have to fly Roger in for some Tacovore fish tacos.
Oh, dude, Tacovore is the joint. Tacovore is the joint. All right, thank you so much, Roma. Enjoy the rest of your night, and have a great week, and best of luck with your finals. And congratulations on that pro debut.
Thanks again. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, anytime. I look forward to having you back.
Yep.
Hey, everybody, that was Roma. And she will be back on Lil Pocky's Lounge in the future. And I am actually getting our next guest on the line as I speak to you all. We are going to be joined by Courtney Cast Iron Casey here as soon as I can type her phone number in, because I'm like a derelict here half the time. Hold on. I got to do three things at once, and my brain only allows me to do one thing. But we'll have her here momentarily, as it is now ringing on. I did what I always rag on Skippy. I'm going to hear about this now because I always bust Skippy's chops about calling people on air. But, hey, when you're doing a show solo, this is how it goes. And, boom, we are joined by the one and only Courtney Cast Iron Sanchez. Courtney, what is going on the great island of Hawaii?
Oh, you know, just beautiful sun and a little bit of rain. We got some winds coming in, but other than that, you know, it's pretty nice.
Hey, now, what better weather? In Guam or in Hawaii?
Ooh. You know, I would say I wasn't in Guam too long, but the weather there was really nice. But I would have to say Maui for sure.
Dang. So, hey, two trips to PXC, two victories. Tell us about them both. Let's start with the first one where you fought against Toma Masewa. That was a quick one, though.
That was a quick one. It was my first cut to 115, and then also my first fight since October 2013. So it was almost a year off. It was good. it was an easy cut. It wasn't hard at all. Made the cut, and I knew she was a tough opponent, but I just, you know, had been working a lot on my striking, and she kind of walked right into a straight right, and I dropped her. My coaches got a little angry because I didn't walk away. They figured I could have got a KO instead of a TKO. But I finished her with elbows. Her corner actually ended up throwing in the towel, so that was kind of interesting.
And I take it that your fight outfit didn't look like somebody took a dump on you after that fight?
No. There was no tanning oil involved in that fight. Even if there was, I don't think it would have mattered because it didn't go to the ground at all. But, she was a super, super nice, very humble fighter. The Japanese fighters are, you know, tough as nails. And so, you know, she was very graceful, you know, outside of the cage as well. So it was good. It was good seeing that, you know, that respect from a fighter, you know, and an opponent, even in a loss. So it was good. It was definitely good.
Now the drop to 115, is this a trend, or are you done at the flyweight division?
Well, I mean, if we go to my next fight for PXC, that one was a catchweight at 110. So, I mean, I might be going to 105. The cut to 110 wasn't terrible, wasn't horrible. If I needed to make 105 for that fight, I probably could have. But we ended up doing catchweight at 110. So, I don't know. Saying that I'd stay at 115, I would say right now I can. But if they need me at 105, I can fight 105. If they need me at 125 and I'm a little bit on the heavier side, I mean, I'll take a fight at 125. I just want to fight, really. So, I mean, I make the weight. You tell me the weight. If it's enough time frame, you know, where I can safely make the weight, you know, I'm more than happy to do so. So, you know, I just want to fight and stay active. And, you know, PXC keeps giving me good opportunities to fight, so I take them.
So now you just touched on the fight at 110 against Gina Inyong. She was the hometown girl. You kind of went in there and rained all over her parade.
Yeah, it was a good fight, a real aggressive fighter. We knew she liked to kind of bully her opponents in the first round, so we figured we'd bully her in the first round and kind of take the center of the ring and kind of push her up against the fence, and that's what we ended up doing. And we know she kind of goes for like a lazy hip toss, and we just said that we were going to more or less embrace it and look to take the back right off of it. So kind of just for me to set myself up, not necessarily to get taken down, but set myself up in a good position where I could just easily take the back from it, and that's what happened. And after that, it was over.
How long after you had her back did you sink the choke in?
It literally took probably the last 3 minutes of the round. There was a lot of like holding of the gloves and stuff like that, which we were kind of briefed by the referees and stuff before, from that camp, kind of is more or less like that. They, not that they're dirty, but that, you know, that they don't give up easily. So it was more just a lot of hand fighting and just me having to communicate with the ref, because they were like, just communicate with us, let us know what's going on. And then after that, I went to sweeper, hoping that she was going to base out and kind of give up a hand to defend with, and that's what happened. And I got to sink in the choke after that. And once the choke was in, it was like seconds. So it was good, though. It was good. She's a tough opponent, and she comes from a really good camp, and I was really excited to fight her because she was kind of ranked high on some charts and stuff. So, and she had some big wins against some top fighters. So it was good. It was a good.
Where do you rank that victory over Gina on your list of fights?
Where was I ranked, or where am I ranked now?
Where do you rank that fight as far as in your career, the fights that you've had, where does that fight rank for you at?
I would say like top four, easily top four, you know, just because it was the first time going into, you know, someone's hometown. Like, I've never had to fight a hometown fighter before. You know, I mean, I fought in Arizona, you know, hometown girls, but we're both from Arizona, so it's not the same, you know. And then plus going to the Philippines where combat sports are, you know, taken very seriously, and the fans get a little hostile. So, you know, it was definitely an additional challenge to kind of overcome and that we had to prepare for camp and stuff like that. And it was just, you know, more like my coaches just letting me know that, you know, the crowd's going to try to get in your head. You know, you got to finish the girl because she's a hometown girl. You don't want to go to the judges. So it was just a little bit, you know, added game plan and stuff like that into my camp. And then just also kind of just staying cool and not letting everything get to me. And so it was definitely, I definitely rank it up there, top four.
Now, with two fights under your belt since the move to Hawaii, how are things going, in your opinion, at the Nest?
Great. The gym's growing. We had a few setbacks because of the hurricanes and stuff that we had, and our mats got flooded, and the gym got a little flooded. But, you know, we're slowly, surely just getting everything back together, trying to, you know, just stay on top of everything and continue to grow and continue to get some of the top fighters in Maui, amateur fighters and pro fighters, you know, in our gym. And we definitely have a lot of quality guys and a lot of light guys, which makes it a lot easier for me for training and stuff, not having to deal with the big guys. So it's definitely going really good. We got great coaches and, you know, just the vibe at our gym is really good. You know, we have a no politics, no ego kind of gym. So it's really good.
Now, is Kendall Grove the head coach there, or who is the head coach?
No, Kendall Grove actually is no longer with the gym at all. Me and my husband actually ended up taking over the gym. So we pretty much run all the classes. My husband's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So he does all the adult Jiu-Jitsu classes, and I do all the kids' Jiu-Jitsu classes and the women's cardio, strength and conditioning kind of stuff. And then we kind of both feed off of each other for the MMA classes as well. When I'm not in camp, you know, I'm helping hold mitts and tie pads and, you know, setting up drills and stuff for them. And, you know, and we kind of just bounce off each other. But when it's fight camp, then I pretty much get to take a step back from that.
Now, the PXC title structure, I'm not sure. Do they have a 115 or a 105 champ?
They don't. They don't have either, actually. So right now it's just getting me fights and, you know, hopefully building another fighter as well, to kind of, you know, build up a title fight. But right now, you know, I'm happy just getting fights and fighting, you know, some of the top girls, because that's what they do, is they bring in top girls from other organizations to fight. And, you know, I'm happy with that. I'm not chasing a belt or anything. You know, if the belt comes, it comes. If not, you know, as long as I'm fighting, I'm fine.
So now I do have to tell you, I'm a little upset with you. In the Toma fight, I picked you to win by submission. You got a KO. So then in the Gina fight, I was like, fine, Courtney. I was like, I see how it is. So I pick KO and you go with the submission. Can we maybe get on the same page there?
I'm sorry. And what's funny about that is I was hoping to get the KO in this last fight, and my coaches are like, look, like, have faith in your hands and don't be afraid to walk away. They're in because who was fighting? I can't think of his name. Hunt was fighting, and he had that walk-away KO on Nelson.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you should get a walk-away KO, get a walk-away KO. So in the fight, you see me, in the film, you see me drop her, and then I kind of step back, and then I realize she's not out, so then I have to go and, you know, leg fight and stuff like that. So it was kind of funny because they're like, have faith in your hands, get that walk-away KO. And I was like, okay, and I dropped her. Because, you know, in practice, you drop someone, you quickly go to the ground because you want to work. You want to get as much time in as you can. So, like, sometimes you get that killer instinct when you can kind of just wait and not wake them up, because that's what happened in the Tomo fight. Is I hit her, dropped her, and then I went to the ground, and when I threw my first, I think it was my first hammer fist, I woke her up. So sometimes, you know, it's good, sometimes it's bad. So this time I kind of stood back, and I was like, oh, okay, she's not out, and I just went in for it. So it was all right. I'm sorry I didn't get your picks, but next time. You let me know what you want ahead of time, and I'll work for it.
No, you tell me what you want, and then I'll go that route, because that I think will be the most successful for both of us.
Whatever gets my hand raised, I don't care if it's Mish, and whatever, I'm not out there to try to beat the crap out of someone. I'm trying to go out there, do what I need to do, and get out as quickly as possible. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to hurt anyone. You know, I want to put on a good show, and if it means I got to go into battle, I'll go into battle. But if I can do it pretty and gracefully, and we both get to go home to our families without having to go to the hospital, I'm happy with that as well.
So now, you've been in Hawaii, what, about 9 months? Have you picked up on any of the hobbies out there? Do you own a surfboard or five yet?
No, I don't own a surfboard. I definitely don't own five. Again, I'd love to, but like I said, we ended up taking over the gym, so a lot of our time has been consumed with building this and making sure that, you know, the fighters here on Maui have a legitimate gym to go and train at. The kids have a safe place to go to after school and train and learn the art and stuff like that. So that's really been our main focus, is really just getting the gym up and going. You know, I have been able to go to the beach. I have been able to stand up, paddleboard, and stuff like that. I just haven't been able to purchase anything at this moment. But Christmas is right around the corner, so hopefully I get something on my list from Santa.
If he's listening, hint, hint, Santa, hint, hint.
Yeah, hint, hint, Santa, someone needs a surfboard.
Now, hey, I always like to find out, I know that your nephew was super important aspect of your life. Have you had him out to the island for a visit yet?
Oh, he came during summer. He drove us completely nuts because all he wanted was snow cones, because we made the mistake of getting him a snow cone the first day, and that's all he wanted was snow cones. But he had a blast. We took him to the beach. He actually jumped off of Black Rock, which is like a kind of a touristy area. It's on like one of the beaches of one of the hotels, and it's just a lava rock that people jump off of. So he, not knowing how to swim, you know, just fearlessly was like, I'm jumping. I'm like, okay. So we went up there, and a lot of the local kids are always up there like, pounding the tourists because they're not jumping, and they're like giving them crap. And I was like, all right. I was like, Aiden, once you get up there, you got to go. And he's like, okay. And I told one of the local guys, I was like, he can't really swim, but he's going to jump. And he's like, oh, he is? And I was like, yeah. So he jumped down first and then waited. And Aiden literally just got up there and jumped, like no hesitation, didn't look, just jumped out there like it was no big deal. And he had a blast. So he's definitely excited to come out. I think he's coming out for spring break, and then we're going to have him out again summer. Try to get him out as much as we can. So
that's
it was
fantastic.
Definitely fun, though.
How high is the jump there at Black Rock?
I think it's, I don't know. I think it's pretty high, 40 feet.
Nice.
I mean,
nice.
Something like that. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can Google it.
It's
pretty high.
I did some dastardly things to some young kids earlier this year up on this jumping hole that I found up on a river that's kind of fed by some glacier water. And I'd been jumping
nice.
In all day. And so I kind of acclimated to the water. And these two kids, they're probably like 12. They come up and they're like, is it cold? And I'm like, not at all. Feels great. So they're like, oh, okay, awesome. The water's warm. He says the water's warm. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, I didn't say it was warm. I just said it wasn't cold. And so they jump off. And as soon as their heads came out of the water, they were like screaming like they had died. They're like, it's so cold. It's so cold. And their dad looks over at me and just starts laughing. And I was like, I'm glad you're laughing about that.
Yeah. Same, that happened too to Aiden when he's there. Eau Valley is right by our gym, like literally like 5 minutes. And what it's cold mountain water from the mountain. It's freezing. So we go there after practice all the time to pretty much get an ice bath. And we told him it was cold, but not too cold, you know, because we jumped in first and we're like, it's not that cold. Same thing, jumps in and like as soon as he comes up, like he had a heart attack, like, big gasping, like, screaming, like, and you're like, you're okay, and he's just, like, shivering, and he was, like, all mad, he's like, it is cold, and we're like, well, it's not that cold, and then, of course, once you're in there for a little bit, then he was over it, he was like, it's not that cold, so
exactly.
It was pretty funny.
It's fantastic how that'll work, you know, you're just like, oh, yeah, it's fine, kid, don't, you're 12, you'll get used to it really quick, don't worry.
Yeah. You'll be fine.
So, hey, now, after your fight with PXC, did they say when you may be back? I mean, they're keeping you super busy. Two fights in about 4.5-5 months. So maybe March-ish, is that maybe when they're going to have you back? Or is that maybe a little too far out for you? Would you like to be back maybe in January?
I'd like to be back as soon as possible, but I did actually, you're like on top of your game, because I just got an email today saying they're thinking March. So I know they have another card before that. Again, they kind of don't want to push it too much, you know, get me too many fights too soon. So, I'm happy with March, but if it's sooner, I'm happy too. But March is good. You know, I at least get the holidays and stuff, but you know, if they give me a call and let me know it's sooner, you know, I'm happy with that as well.
Now, down at this 115, 110, possible 105 area, how much of your fat kid are you going to let out during the holiday season?
Ooh, well, I mean, we did just have Thanksgiving. I'm only 128 right now, and I've literally been eating Thanksgiving for the past week now. Like, that's all I've been eating is Thanksgiving still. So, I'm not putting on weight too much. I'm still kind of conscious of what I'm eating, and I'm still training pretty decently. You know, I was back in the gym that next week, but it's still, like, slow. I'm not doing, like, 2 days or 3 days. You know, I'm just making sure I'm getting my jiu-jitsu in, and then a lot of hard rolling and just kind of staying in shape, and then I think I'll be back at it next week. We have some guys fighting next weekend, too, so I should be in there the end of this week, next week, just to kind of be an extra body for them, but I don't think I'll put on too much weight. I'll try to sit at highest I'll probably go is like 132, but other than that, I'll probably stay in the 20s.
So, hey, Cor, we have a listener question, and that would be, what is the hardest part for you to get used to when fighting for overseas organizations? Any regulations or customs that take getting used to compared to your tough and XFC experiences?
No, I mean, PXG's been a great organization, very professional and stuff like that. They put on a great show, and actually I was talking to them when I was there, letting them know that, you know, like, they do a good job, like, they treat you well. Tough Enough is a great organization. They treat the amateur fighters as if they're pros, you know, and they don't treat them just like fighters, normal fighters. You know, you'll get phone calls, you know, from them, and just kind of see how your camp was going and if you're ready and stuff like that. And the same goes with PXC. XFC was a great organization as well, you know, and then they kind of shut down the U.S. market and stuck over to Brazil. So, you know, I'm really, really happy with PXC. I think that the hardest thing is having to fight in such different time zones. Like, getting acclimated to the time change is probably the hardest part. But other than that, I mean, everything's good. They treat me well, and, you know, I'm happy with everything.
Have you found when you go to PXC that you tend to stay on your Hawaiian time zone, or do you try to make that transition on just a couple days' notice to their time orientation, I guess, to where maybe it's probably about, what, 4 hours behind you guys there in Hawaii, 4 or 5 hours?
Guam's, like, 4 hours, and, like, I think Manila was like 6 or so. I don't know. I was messed up. All I know is I was messed up. I got like 4 hours of sleep the whole time, like no more than 4 to 5 hours of sleep. I was waking up at like 3 o'clock their time, and it was crazy. It was horrible. And then right when I got on to Manila time, I wasn't even on Manila time until I got back to Maui, and then all of a sudden the first day I was on Manila time, and I'm like, what the heck? Like, it was so hard, and we tried to, like, stay awake, you know, wake up early and do that whole thing, but when you're running a business, you're trying to train full-time, you're trying to be a mom full time, like it's hard. Like people got to eat, you know, got to pay bills, you got to collect dues, you got to train guys. So it was hard, but we tried to kind of, you know, get on a schedule. But once you get out there, it's like, okay, wait, it's what time? And I got to go to bed now, and then I got to wake up. You got to cut weight, you got to do press interviews, you know. So it's still hard getting on a schedule. If I had the means to go out an extra week early, even a week before the fight, that'd probably be the best. But, you know, they still kind of put you up 4 days before the fight. So you kind of get used to only being on, you know, that short amount of sleep. So it wasn't too bad. I was fine with it. It's just getting back on track was all crazy.
Now, are you able to fight for any other organizations while you're with PXC, or are you strictly with PXC right now? Is there maybe the possibility of going down to Australia or even fighting again for XFC maybe in Brazil? Is that anything that could possibly happen?
Anything's possible. Like I said, PXC's they're great. They're a great organization. Ken over there and all the guys over there are super great. I can fight in the States for sure. As far as XFC goes, possibly. I know they're doing more of a tournament kind of status, kind of style of fighting as far as their women's division. So I don't know if that's a route that I take. But, you know, I'm definitely open to taking fights in different organizations. And I know I don't see Ken having a problem with it as long as it doesn't, you know, interfere with any of their shows. So, as long as I'm active, you know, and I'm staying healthy, I don't mind taking fights in other organizations if they come up.
Now, how are the crowds over? How was the crowd in Guam?
Insane. It's crazy. Like, I don't even know how to explain. Like, the fans are amazing. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better venue in Guam, and I couldn't have asked for a better venue in I weighed in Manila on the Thrilla in Manila scale. Like, that's how old the scale was. Like, it was literally the same scale that Muhammad Ali weighed in on. That's pretty freaking cool.
Dude, that's got to be one of the highlights of the career to be able to say that you've weighed in on the same scale as a legend like that. I mean, you know, while the sport may be different, at the end of the day, you know, I think that a lot of fighters look at what a guy like Muhammad Ali did for boxing and would like to transcend that into their sport.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, they're like, because we're all worried about the scales. Like, well, you know, all the fighters are cutting weight and they all have scales. And everyone's like, well, let me try your scale. Let me weigh in on your, you know, trying to figure out if they're over a pound or under a pound or whatever it is. And then they're like, oh, well, we're weighing in on the old Thrill in Manila scale. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, like, you need to be on point because that thing is ancient. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, if you breathe, you're going a pound over, you know, like if you move or do anything, it's going. You're like, are you serious? They're like, yeah. So, you know, everyone was standing on there trying to be as still as possible. And what the cool thing about it is everyone made weight. There was one guy that didn't make weight, but he made it after the 2 hours. So everyone technically made weight. So it was good. It was really cool. Like the scale's like blue and it's like ancient, like it's ancient, and like you stand on it, you literally, like I put my hand on top of it and then like slowly stood on it and then like took a deep breath and then was like, okay, weigh me now. Like, so, but it was cool. And then the venue I fought in was the same venue that Pacquiao fought his last fight in before he moved over and started fighting in the States. So that was pretty cool too.
Oh, right on. So there's some history when you go to a place like Manila to fight. That's got to be
yeah.
really cool. And one of the aspects I think that a lot of fighters don't get to experience because they're so enthralled with just trying to get to the UFC that, you know, you're one of the few MMA practitioners besides the other folks on that card that'll get to say they've had that type of an experience where you fought in the same venue as Pacquiao before he was Pacquiao and you've been on a scale that Muhammad Ali was on.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like I said, I'm super happy with XFC. Like, I would have never had with PXC, would never have had the opportunity to fight in Manila or Guam. So it's definitely a blessing, you know, moving out here and then getting in touch with PXC and being able to take those fights. You know, and they asked me, they're like, where would you rather fight, Guam or Manila? And I'm like, wherever you guys want to have me, I'm willing to fight. Either either venue's awesome. Either place, you know, the fans are great. So, I mean, I'm just super, super happy with them and super happy with how they treat their fighters. And, you know, I'm just excited to step back in the cage again.
Now, so a big aspect of making weight is that meal right after you eat or right after you hit the scales. What did you find to eat in Guam, and how did that treat the body?
I found right across the hotel was this little Italian restaurant, so I went there. I tried to always go get pasta afterwards, so I got pasta there, and then I told Ken when I was in Manila, I was like, hey, I need pasta afterwards, and he's like, I got a great place. And then we went to this pasta restaurant right across the street to another hotel, and it was awesome. All the food was amazing, as far as, like, being able to still eat, you know, what you're used to as far as spaghetti and stuff like that, and then after the fight, being able to try, you know, some of the local food and going down to the markets and stuff and getting some street food. So it was definitely good. They're still very Americanized, I would say, like the area that they put us in as far as the hotels and stuff. So there was a Subway nearby and stuff like that. So you can still kind of get, you know, the food that you're used to eating before fights and not have to kind of be like, hey, can I eat this? Is it okay to eat this? Do I need to go buy something like a rice cooker from the store and like food from the store and try to make food? And so they set it up real nice. And like I said, PXC does a great job. So they kind of like give you like an itinerary and kind of show you what's around that area of like as far as restaurants and grocery stores. So you can get, you know, what you need to get. So they definitely do a good job with that.
What was the best street food you had in Guam and in Manila?
Guam, you know, I didn't have street food really in Guam. I went to this this Jamaican restaurant, actually, that was right across from the hotel, which was awesome. And then they took me to a local pizza parlor in Guam, which was, again, good. But in Manila, it would have to be these little, they're like a Parmesan French fries, like Parmesan fries. That you got, those were good. And then just the all the little candies. I don't even know what kind of candies they were. They were just little candies that this lady was selling, like fruit candies.
Awesome.
They were delicious. Which
is
really
awesome.
Weird, though. You can get corn, like just a cup of corn. I gotta get some corn. I gotta get this corn. I'm thinking like, okay, corn on the cob, you know, like, you know, roasted corn. And we go, and it's literally corn, just like a cup of corn. And the guy's like, do you want butter on it? And he's like, yeah. He's like, do you want something else on top? Salt, pepper, and I guess it was like a cream or something. And he's like, no, just butter. And I'm like, okay. He's like, this is the best corn ever. And I was like, it's just corn in a cup. Like, it's there's nothing special about that. But I guess that's what they like, corn in a cup.
Now, hey, I'm not sure. Did you get to watch many of the fights on the Manila card? And if so, what did you think of those fights?
I did. I did get to watch a few of the fights. They're good. You know, they're good. PXC has a lot of really talented fighters and very, I would say very strong-hearted and aggressive fighters. You know, they definitely go out there to put a show on. You know, they fight with so much pride and you know, not wanting to let their camps down and not wanting to let their families down because, you know, they're very family-oriented and stuff like that. And, you know, not, I don't know. Like, they're great fighters. Like, they definitely have that fighting spirit. You know, it's going to be a brawl. There's no easy way out. Like, they're either getting knocked out, or they're getting choked out, or their arm's getting broke. Like, that's how I feel like every fight goes, is like it's a battle. Or it's like a split decision because, you know, it's so hard to choose. Split decision, or like I said, someone's getting knocked out or submitted. So it was definitely a good night of fights. It was definitely a good night of fights.
Yeah, and PXC 46 was a monster card with the twin title fights. You had the flyweight title fight, the Alvin one, and then Chuji ended up winning the lightweight title fight there. So that had to be pretty intense to be on a card like with that kind of exposure and heat behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and all the fighters are so nice. They're very humble fighters. They're super, you know, friendly outside of, you know, the cage and stuff, and just being in the hotel, very friendly. So, you know, it's really nice to kind of see the other side of the fighters and just the respect that they give each other and give their opponents and stuff like that. So it's definitely kind of a different vibe with PXC just because of the cultural differences and stuff like that. So it's really cool. It's definitely really cool.
And then what was the crowd reaction after Gina taps out?
I see. It was kind of, they were excited. They were excited. It was a good fight. I don't think they were very happy that she lost because she was not only a hometown girl, but pretty much like their spotlight, you know, like she was their female MMA fighter. Like that's who it was, you know, and kind of chopping her down in the first round, like I did, you know, I think was more of a shock to them. So, you know, because a lot of people were saying like, oh, that should have been a title fight. You know, they, you know, me and her should have fought for a title. But it they were definitely more embracing after the fight, I guess, after it cooled down a little bit. I had a lot of people coming up to me and talking to me. So, you know, it was good. It's always hard taking down, you know, a hometown hero like that. But it was good. It was good in the end.
That's awesome, man. I'm so happy for you to be getting the opportunity to display your skill set on the worldwide stage. And as always, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight on the show or join me tonight on the inaugural episode of Lopaki's Lounge. Do you want to give a shout-out to any of your sponsors or anything like that, Courtney?
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout-out to Triumph United, Pharmacy Health Bar here in Maui, my gym, The Nest, my husband, and all my family. Give a shout-out to Liquid Ninja for sure. And Clinch Mouth Guards. And other than that, you know, just super happy to be back on the show, and hopefully we can keep this more regular.
Yeah, yes, we will. Yes, we will. We have to do that. I promise you to make it a point to have you on every couple months, and that way we can keep up to date a little bit better and not have to recap like 7 of your fights and see how many times you've had to buy your nephew snow cones.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of money on snow cones.
Are the snow cones that freaking good?
They're that good. I'm telling you, they're that good. Like, you have snow cones, and then you have, like, Maui snow cones. Like, they're good. And then they have this, like, snow ice.
You guys don't even have snow.
Well, Hawaiian shaved ice, you know, it's Hawaiian. But they have this thing like snow ice, which is like, it's like candy ice. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like stringy fluff. I don't know. It's snow ice.
Which
it's
one
weird.
Do you prefer?
It's I like the snow ice. That's pretty good. I like them all. That condensed, and then they put this condensed milk on top of it. Like, can't go wrong with that. Whipped cream.
Is that the first thing you got when you got back from PXC?
No, it wasn't. The first thing I got when I got back from PXC was house fried rice from this bar called Tiffany's. And it has, not only does it have Spam in it, but it also has like bacon pieces in it. It's delicious.
So, hey, I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot to ask you earlier when you said you were eating Thanksgiving out there. Now, is Thanksgiving on the islands, does that mean you just bake a whole bunch of Spam or do they actually use a turkey?
It's a turkey with Spam like on top of it with toothpicks. They put Spam with toothpicks, and they, instead of putting stuffing in there, they put Spam inside the turkey.
Oh my, that's like some kind of a Hawaiian version of a turducken.
I'm kidding. It's just a regular turkey.
You brat. You're such a brat.
It's just a regular turkey. We didn't even have Spam for Thanksgiving, so I don't know. That probably is because where we went for Thanksgiving, it was all the families that had family that aren't from Hawaii. So everyone wasn't from Hawaii. So I would say we probably had a more traditional Thanksgiving than, you know, some of the guys at the gym had.
So now, okay, do you like Spam or Moco Loco more?
Oh, they're complete. You can't even compare the same. They're not even the same category. But if I had to choose,
Hawaiian staples are both Hawaiian staples.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, one's Spam and then one's like a whole meal. But if you say like Spam Mitsubishi, which is the Spam on top of rice wrapped in the seaweed, or a Loco Moco, I would probably say Loco Moco on a non fighting camp kind of thing, and then, you know, Spam Mitsubishi kind of like a treat during camp because it's still fattening, but not as bad as eating a whole Loco Moco.
No, man, that would put you up two weight classes if you ate that too often.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good, though. They are definitely good.
All the brown gravy and everything like that would just be, you'd be a bantamweight.
Yeah, and the rice and that greasy hamburger patty.
Now
I might have to have that for dinner now. Might have to have that for dinner.
Well, you can blame me for that. You can blame me for that. But, hey, Court, I'll let you get back to your night. I know you're super busy. Thank you so much for taking the time out to join us tonight, and I look forward to having you back on here in the near future.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Right. That was Courtney Cast Iron Casey, fresh off back-to-back victories at PXC 44 and 46. She is a savage, just like Roma is a savage. Both of these ladies have big things with bright futures coming ahead of them, so keep an eye out for them. And do not miss the next episode of Lopaki's Lounge. I'm not really sure when that's going to be yet. I don't even have guests lined up for it. But I will keep you guys in the loop. It will be before the end of December and before 2015 begins. But tomorrow night, if you tune into Madhouse Live, you will hear from the one, the only, Anthony Berchek in lead up to his UFC Fight on Fox or whatever the hell it is, 13, live from Phoenix, Arizona, next Saturday night. That's December 13th. He has a fight with British Sensation, as they would like to dub him, Ian Entwistle. But I have a bad feeling for poor Ian. It's going to be a quick night for him, and he's going to go home with just his show money because my boy is going to put it on him and get that show and win money and a bonus. I'm not sure which bonus yet, but I know there will be a bonus. If you've watched Anthony's last few fights, they are action-packed, and they guarantee to deliver. So make sure you tune in tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific, to the Madhouse Live Nation show with Skippy Cohen and myself, because it will be getting down and dirty. And for now, that's our show this evening, and I appreciate Bootsy, Roger, and I'm going to say your name wrong, and I'm going to feel like an asshole, but Tony, thanks for tuning in. Everybody, I really appreciate the support on this episode, and we'll be back for more in the future. Bootsy, you're going to be lined up as a guest on the lounge one night, so be ready, brother. Thank you guys all. Have a great night, and I'm out.